This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Joining me as they do every single week for the roundtable from MGO Blog, Brian Cook. How are you?
Vaccinated. It's a process.
Good for you. Flint, how are you not going? You're going to give Brian Cook a vaccine. I can't get a vaccine.
You can get a vaccine. There are a bunch of like Rite Aid appointments you can get in Flint.
Man.
And the best part is. I was walking around outside because you're supposed to walk around outside, and there was an empty can of olives that was like 4 pounds of olives. So I just thought about people sitting outside the Rite Aid eating 4 pounds of olives, and I was like, this place is awesome. I didn't know that those people in Flint did.
Like, yeah, everyone around me is vaccinated. Seth Fisher, vaccinated. How you doing, Seth?
Feeling the effects, honestly.
Okay. All right, but you're vaccinated, though.
I am. I'm trying not to brag because some of you people like have not been, you know, jumping on websites and getting in your car, you know, for a 15% chance of getting the shot. But you know, you put the work in, you can get the shot in your arm.
That's crazy. I mean, I'm on Kroger, I'm on Walmart, not Walmart, Walgreens. Maybe is Walmart offering it too? I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
CVS. I can't find them anywhere, man. Craig Ross vaccinated, right?
Just last week, I finally got called in by over at Domino's at IHA. So yeah, it hit me actually. The first shot is supposed to be okay, but it made me sick for a day, but not a big deal. Slightly sick.
Oh, Scott Patton just said Ford Field has openings. Meyer, sign up. I'm there, Scott. I'm there. Mm-hmm. I'm doing that. Ira Weintraub vaccinated. I'm the only one in this mix not vaccinated. Damn it, it's not for lack of trying. But let's talk some Michigan basketball, fellas. We just got done talking to Saidi Washington, and we saw a great performance. We saw Eli Brooks carried him early. I'm sure we'll talk about. We saw Franz Wagner late. He was the guy down the stretch. Shondi Brown throughout. But I thought the game plan, I thought the in-game adjustments were a huge part of the outcome as well. I'm curious what you guys think, starting with you, Brian.
Yeah, I overheard you telling Saidi that you thought Juwan had outcoached Will Wade, and I was like, that's true, but that's a low bar, right? Like, so their offense is just like, go ISO because you have like four dudes who can just do that. So what are they spending their practice time on? Because it's not defense.
No.
It's not guarding the three-point line. What are they doing? What do they do in practice? I need to know. Are they playing Axis and Allies in practice? It doesn't seem likely.
Ryan, I'm thinking the same thing. Man, Tim McCormick and I had this conversation on the Michigan Basketball Insider this week because suddenly, right, LSU, they're going to play some defense. Just like suddenly Iowa is going to play some defense.
Give
me a break. Because you watch them play and time after time, like they had the double of Hunter Dickinson down. They knew they were supposed to double Hunter. But after that, it was like, okay, now what? Like, what are we doing? After we double Hunter Dickinson, they had no clue.
Every shot fake sent them flying. Like just here, look at basketball. What? Ah!
There was that possession where they tried to go zone and they just kicked it to Eli in the corner and there was no one within 20 feet of him. And then there was like Shondi Brown is like on fire and like Javonte Smart's closing out to him and he doesn't even raise his hand. He's just kind of like, well, I am powerless to do anything about this. And I'm just like, what are you doing, Will Wade?
Hey, think about the one, I pointed this one out as well. The one, the basket cut by Terrence Williams. There were literally four players around Hunter Dickinson. He could have thrown to anyone on the court wearing the same jersey, and they would have been wide open because those guys had no clue on that end of the floor.
It's a good thing, too, because those guys can score, let me tell you. Like, jeez. Cameron Thomas came out of that game, and he's just like 18-footer, Dirk Nowitzki fadeaway. Doesn't matter. All of this is going in. And you're like, all right, we're in trouble now. But he plays 40 minutes, so he kind of wears down towards the end of that game. And also, like, the shots he was making were not sustainable, right? Like, nobody makes those at a good clip. And Eli was able to, like, kind of lock it down in the second half. I thought it was interesting that in the second half, when Shondi was on the floor, they put him on Smart. Because Smart was getting those floaters that reminded me of Cassius Winston. And if you've got a point guard who can do that against drop coverage, that's really tough to defend. So he was a guy who I thought really exploited Michigan's lack of size in the backcourt. But when you put Shondi Brown on him, that's no longer a problem.
Craig, what did you think?
Well, I agree with you guys that this was essentially a game won by coaching to some extent, because LSU is very talented. I mean, they've got 3-4 guys who can play basketball. But Brian's point is right on. I mean, it's hard to understand exactly what they were doing because all they do, and at least in practice, because all they do is ISO. I mean, they do ISO. They do an occasional high ball screen to try and switch, so maybe they get a slightly better advantage on the ISO. But otherwise, that's it. I mean, and that's something you could do with a throwdown team or a pickup team. And so it's hard for me to understand exactly what else is going on there. Michigan did well to win this game in part because we got clobbered on the boards. We turned it over a lot more. And I think they ended up with 16 or 17 more shots.
I think it was 13 because they had nine more turnovers Michigan did, and LSU had four more offensive rebounds. So in terms of shots that got up, it's 13. So that's a pretty big gap.
That's a pretty big gap, especially for a team that came out on fire making floaters, runners. And so this was, in some ways, a fairly remarkable win by Michigan, and certainly a win for the coaching staff, given the way the game came around. Now Michigan did later in the game do some hedging, and I thought the hedging was, particularly effective against them. They did not handle that well on offense.
You don't think they'd practice that either?
You would think someone has hedged on their ball screens, but the truth is they're pretty much just an isolation team. They just clear out, give it to a guy, and see what happens. I mean, that's it. And yeah, their defense was not great for a team that seems, pretty damn athletic.
They don't really have a post player, so that's a problem for them. But even so, like, Michigan shot, I think, 67% from two.
Yeah, that's right.
And they had 25 wide open threes. So
it's like, man, they don't spend any time. And he admits it. Will Wade is like, look, we can score, we can keep them engaged that way. We'll try to adjust defensively. But mainly their defense, we just try to put pressure on you by running up and down the court and running up the score. That works against a lot of teams. It's not gonna one dimensional teams, I just don't think, are going to be able to beat Michigan, in my opinion. Let's shift gears and scout Florida State for me, Seth. Tell me about the Seminoles.
They're tall. do you remember the 2018 Seminoles? They basically rebuilt that team again. Leonard Hamilton loves to use his bench, so he runs, I think, 11 deep. And actually, it gave 11 guys gave them time. They do have a 7-footer, which kind of scares me. He's not the strongest 7-footer, and he only plays 50% of their minutes. And they have a backup 7-footer, but I was talking to some FSU guys yesterday who are like, no, if that guy gets on the court, it's bad news. So, I mean, that's kind of the question is, can that guy shut down Hunter Dickinson? And, they got tall guards who can kind of harass us into an Illinois game. Or, can that guy get put under the basket and Michigan can go about their business?
Yeah, the crazy thing about Balsa Koprivica, who's their starting center, is that if you go look up his stats on Synergy, he's faced a total of 13 post-ups all year. So it's really an open question whether this guy can defend Hunter Dickinson one-on-one. I mean, maybe not. I couldn't tell you. I do know he gets in foul trouble a lot, so he's at 5.6 fouls per 40. So that kind of maybe indicates that he might have some issues. And then correspondingly, like, he's not a post-up guy. He's like 6th percentile as a post-up player. So he's a guy who operates in the dunker spot and is not going to put a lot of pressure on Hunter Dickinson himself. So I feel like that's going to be a big hinge point in the game, is whether Koprivica can actually, one, stay on the floor, and two, defend Dickinson one-on-one.
Yeah, this is not a 7-foot, an imposing 7-footer, to your point. Like, I sort of, as I was kind of like, what is this going to be like? It's not going to be Hunter going against Kofi Coburn. It'll be more like Hunter going against Liam Robbins. Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully the first time around, right, where Hunter just destroyed Liam Robbins in that game. But here's the thing. You said he's not going to put pressure on Hunter. Hopefully he can use that to his advantage, because, man, the cheap fouls he picked up in the last game. Like, oh, dude.
Well,
he's got to stay on the floor.
He got through the first half with no fouls, so he had a little bit more, I think, leniency in the second half. The one at midcourt was just a frustration foul because he got hacked and he was mad. And that's okay. He knows he's not supposed to do that, right? So it's like, comes to the, like, don't do that. And like, yeah, I know. I have kids. I know what that's like.
And then, are your kids 7 foot two?
Well, not yet. Probably not ever, but we're working on it. Feeding them lots of bones.
Well, Brian, you're pretty tall. He could get up there.
Yeah, the wife is not, though, so we're aiming more towards soccer, I think.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a concern if we didn't see him pick up a few cheapies. It seems like one or two cheapies a game, because they're hunting for him anyway, right? They're calling him for, they're going to get him for a ticky tack foul anyway. So the easy calls, like the, you know, the swipe at half, attempt to swipe at half, like you said, or the push off where Juwan was like, even Juwan, who, you know, you don't really see what he's saying. The guy's just like, man, what are you doing? You don't need to do that. Can't get those kind of fouls.
Yeah, so that's when Juwan is yelling at Hunter Dickinson and not the officials, you're like, all right, well, he probably knows what he's talking about.
I still don't think the physics worked for the amount that that guy jumped out of the way as soon as Hunter Dickinson touched him. Like, it was a foul, don't get me wrong, but foul, I don't think that Hunter Dickinson is that strong.
So yeah,
one other interesting
thing about the Florida State thing is, if you look them up on Synergy, they're like a 99th percentile catch and shoot team, and they're a 2nd percentile team shooting off the dribble. I have never seen anything like that in lots and lots of years of looking up basketball stats. So if they're allowed to catch and shoot, they're awesome. But if you are able to use that drop coverage and induce them as pick and roll ball handlers to pull up in the Rocket Watts zone, well, it's going to take a Rocket Watts performance for them to like get to a point per possession. So I think this is actually a really good fit for Michigan's defense, because they induce a lot of long jumpers off the dribble.
It's a really good point. I mean, Florida State is a kind of curious team, because you look at what they've done this year, and to some extent, their record doesn't make any sense. I mean, they lost to Notre Dame by 10, and were down by more than 25 in that game, I think. And Notre Dame is awful.
And the regular season crown is on the line at that point. Yeah. So you know they are overlooking Notre Dame in that game.
No, that, you know, and they get beat by Georgia Tech a couple times. They lose to Clemson. They lose to UCF. We beat UCF by 22. They lost to UCF by a dozen. And so on the other hand, you look at them and go, wow, this team, you know, they're big. And I mean, their point guard, it comes off the bench, right? Isn't he Scotty Barnes?
Yes.
And he's like 6'9". Point guard. And Mike Smith had trouble in the LSU game, because that's a big athletic backcourt. Those guys are 6'4", 6'5". Well, here you got a bigger backcourt. And, you know, there's 6'5", to 6'9", in the backcourt. And so that's something that's bothersome. You wonder how Mike is going to deal with that.
I mean, Scotty Barnes is not going to be playing point, right? Like, or sorry, Smith is not going to be guarding Barnes.
Point. Yeah, he's not going to be defending. Yeah, probably.
Right. So,
but MJ Walker or Raekwon Evans, who are 6'4", 6'5", probably will.
Yeah.
And so that's a question as to how we're going to handle that. On the other hand, you look at their overall body of work, and it's like, I don't know, curious. So I don't know. Have you guys seen them much? I haven't seen them much.
They also went to overtime against Indiana, which doesn't feel like a good result, right? So
yeah. So I don't know. Certainly, it's a game Michigan can win. Certainly, Hunter has to not get the ridiculous fouls on it. The ones that are, you know, where he just has to keep his head in the game and not do silly stuff. But
You brought up Scotty Barnes, and he gets a lot of his points in tradition in transition, and a lot of his assists. He has a ton of assists, but what he does, he gets up the court so fast, and then you know if it's only your guard against that guy, you know he's going to the rim, or you have to you know bring extra help, and then they kick it out, and they are awesome, and I think that's part of that. That catch and shoot number is a lot of their catch and shoot threes are off of the transitions where Scotty Barnes whips it back out again and they take a shot and they make it. So, you know, Michigan's a pretty good transition defense and, you know, they're going to get a couple run outs, but, you know, if that's what FSU needs to win, that's kind of bad news for them.
Yeah. The other thing about FSU is they do turn the ball over some. I think they're number 254 in turnovers. Now, on the other hand, we don't turn teams over at all. So I think that's going to have some potential in the game. If Michigan can get them into some turnovers, some steals, I really like Michigan's chance in the game. But overall, I'm feeling like this is a game Michigan can win.
Well, Saadi said that, you know, Leonard Hamilton is a legend in the game. And that may be, I'm not disputing that.
Yeah,
it's how we'll coach circles around this guy. So, I mean, if it comes down to coaching, I just think game, set, match. I hope it comes down to coaching because I think tactically we are learning, or we have learned that is going to be a strength for Michigan. In most games, it'll be an advantage. In this game, I think it's an advantage. It was an advantage in the last game. So, if it comes down to that, man, give that to me all day.
But there's a big gap between Will Wade
and Leonard Hamilton.
I agree. I mean, Will Wade admits that he admitted that he doesn't even focus on defense. I mean, so
why would you say that out loud? Like, that's like Ed Orgeron.
Why would you say? Because you said I'm gonna make a guy a strong ass offer, and you still have a job. You can say whatever you want to say.
Say whatever you want.
And keep your job, right? So he doesn't have to be concerned about that. No, but man, it's been a joy to watch. I mean, a lot of people have been talking about the out of bounds play where he puts Hunter in the middle, and Hunter goes Tom Brady and follow. Was it Franz? He found streaking down the court.
Yeah,
that's some great stuff right there, man. And it's textbook for Juwan at this point. I'm curious if you guys think that what we saw from Eli Brooks and Shondi Brown, is that sustainable?
Well, I mean, shooting comes and goes, right? You have high variance three-pointers that either go down or not. But I think, you know, Eli Brooks is no longer the guy who he was a couple years ago, where if something goes wrong for him, he's going to just go into a funk, right? Like, he's had games this year where he just misses a bunch of shots. And then, you know, when he's open in the second half and Michigan really needs one, he cans it. So I feel like you can expect something along those lines from Eli Brooks, as long as he gets those looks, right? So this is a good game for Eli Brooks to get clean looks from three. Florida State, I mean, they do give up a lot of threes, but unlike FSU, there is sort of a mechanism where you could see why teams would be taking poor threes, because they're top 10 in two-point defense in the country. So maybe Michigan will take slightly worse looks, and then Brooks is not the guy who you want to be taking fairly heavily contested threes against guys who are 6'5". You know, Shondi, on the other hand, you know, if he gets a crack, he's like freshman Zach Irvin, right? Like, if he thinks he can get a three-pointer up, it's going up. And he's at 40% on the season. He's had some lulls, but I feel like Shondi Brown's ability to can threes in this game and also drive for the bucket like he did against LSU is going to be a big key. Because he's the one guy who shoots from the outside right now without Livers, who has the kind of shot where even if you're a tall guy trying to contest it, it's not going to really affect it that much.
Yeah.
Well, I think we all would feel better if Isaiah was playing in this game, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And the history of Michigan's season is someone is always picking up the slack. You know, whether it's been Franz or Mike Smith or somebody, someone has always sort of stepped in and said, okay, I'm having this game. And the team always seems happy to find that guy and to find the guy who actually has the hot hand. And it's been like that the entire season. And sort of the, I think Saudi mentioned this in your interview, Sam, said, you know, someone is always on this team has always picked it up. We don't know who it's going to be game by game, but somebody, you know, in this particular game, you had Eli keeping in the recent game. Even for LSU, they, you know, it was Eli who kept them in early. Then Shondi got hot, and then Franz sort of finished the game out in the second half. So it's been like that a lot this year. It's one of the nice parts of this team. You don't seem to have to rely on any one guy.
So the next time we come on, guys. Is Michigan a Final Four team?
I would say probably not, just because you have two tough games where Michigan is going to be in. So you got two of them. You know, I'd say if it was just Florida State and Michigan's weighed, that's a weighted coin flip in their favor. Then Bama is likely going to be the Elite Eight opponent. And they go really fast. They only take shots at the rim and threes. So it's going to depend a lot on whether those threes go down. They're a very good team. You know, they do guard you. That's one thing that they are elite at. So that's, you know, I would say probably not, but it's not like Michigan doesn't have the best chance in the regional, I would say, but it's two games.
I just learned that Nate Oates only gives one. They have these practices, their scrimmages at the end of every practice, and Nate Oates only gives you 1 point if you make a 2-point jumper. And so that's kind of how he coached all those out of the game. But like, I watched their game against Arkansas, and you know, they were still going to the rim, even though Arkansas has, you know, a bunch of tall guys. So if they're still trying it against, you know, Hunter Dickinson and Franz Wagner, like that's the way to beat those guys. And then like if their threes go down and, you know, they'll play defense and stuff. But I'm almost more afraid of FSU than I am of Bama, not because they're a better team, but like they're just a worse matchup for us with all their size.
Yeah, if I had to bet money on which of the teams would make it to the Final Four, and I would say I would put it on Michigan. I don't think that means it's more likely than not. I mean, I just think maybe about a 35-38% chance that Michigan's going to make the Final Four. They have a plurality chance. But you're going to have to beat two really good teams. But there are two teams I think Michigan could beat or can beat. I have a question for you guys. What do you think about the Big Ten? I mean,
Where are who?
I asked this. I said last week that I thought the parochial nature of the season had left everyone sort of wondering or about, well, how good are these various teams and conferences? Because you didn't really have much of a guide to know. And I think the Big Ten was sort of given their due over a couple of wins against Duke. And as it turned out, Duke stunk. And the ACC hasn't been all that really good in seemingly this year either. And it looks like the Pac-10 or the Pac whatever they are now, 12, 8, the Pac actually was well undervalued and has really been apparently a good conference.
So let's do this, because let's do this discussion in the overtime. Mm-hmm. We'll talk Big Ten and how Michigan is the team carrying the flag for the entire conference. Hello, Illinois. So that's great. And we'll talk some hockey at that point as well. But I want to get you guys in real quick on Michigan's women's basketball team in the Sweet 16 for the first time ever. This is a huge accomplishment for Kim Barnes-Rico and her program.
Well, I'm stunned, I have to admit, because early in the season, Michigan won a lot of games. They were, I don't know, 13-0 or 4. So I started watching them, and every time I watched them, they were terrible. And
Watching when Leah Brown went out. Leah Brown.
Yeah, and when she came back, she wasn't playing that well, and so they looked essentially like a one-person team. They just try to pound it into Nas, who's a wonderful player, probably the best player ever played at Michigan, or maybe certainly the best player ever played at Michigan. And, you know, I was disappointed. And so I was surprised by how well they played against Tennessee, a game they truly dominated. And Leah Brown played well and looked like more what she probably played like earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. Now, does anyone actually think they're going to beat? They play South Carolina. Is that
Baylor,
right?
Baylor,
not South Carolina. Yeah, I don't think so. But it's an amazing accomplishment that they made the round of 16. Something that Michigan's never been able to do. And so, congratulations to that team and Barnes and Rico for really having a nice season.
Yeah, if you can beat Tennessee, you can beat anybody. That's not the great Tennessee of old, but like that was a really good Tennessee team with a lot of athleticism who had some COVID issues during this year. And then Michigan, like there's Michigan when it's just Nas, and then there's Michigan when Haley Brown is on, and I think that. Mm-hmm. When Leah Brown is on, and that allows Haley Brown to be more kind of a third banana, which is her best role, right? When she can just, you know, fill in behind. When you're asking her to be the second creator or asking Dilk to be, Dilk is her best ball handler, but she's never been a great shooter. If you're asking one of those girls to do everything for you, you just end up putting it down to Naz and hoping that she can make it. When you've got, you know, a secondary scorer who's they have to watch, I mean, Michigan is a good team.
Yeah, and they've been considering that Amy Dilk hasn't even been with them for the first two games of the tournament. It sounds like she may not be with them, period. As Kim didn't even have an update on her status. That's even more commendable, the job that they're doing, the way they control tempo in that game. But Craig, you were talking about the Big Ten. Michigan. It's not just the Big Ten, though. It's look at the Big 12 and all the L's that the Big 12 that they've taken, and the Pac-12 looks like the strong conference. That's the one that's the most baffling to me, that the Pac-12 has risen to the fore.
Well, you know, when I watched the Michigan State UCLA game, and I thought, wow, Michigan State is playing their best game of the year. I thought that was I've watched Michigan State all year long. I've probably seen every one of their games. And I thought it was the best game they've played. And they're ahead 14, and then UCLA just takes the game over. And it wasn't so much that Michigan State was bad, I felt, but UCLA was just really good. I mean, they have two phenomenal players. Jacquez, who is just phenomenal. He is a basketball player. And the other guy, Zugzwang or something like that.
Juzang,
sorry. He's Zugzwang is a chess position, I think, where you're stuck or something. But any event, those two guys are phenomenal. And that team has stunned me at how good they were going through. And it's weird the way Michigan State was playing. If they had beaten UCLA, I think they'd be in the round of 16. But other than that, you know, the Big Ten has been a dog. I mean, Purdue was disappointing. Ohio State was
overtime, but. This is the weirdest tournament, I think, of all time. This is the weirdest Sweet 16 of all time. So I think that there's definitely like a coronavirus aspect to guys getting upset. And then, you don't want to, overstate the results of a few different games, right? So the Big Ten, if you go to KenPom, still the number one conference in the country, and it's not close. There's, a three-point gap, and that three-point gap is more than the gap between the Big 12, which is number two, and the Big East, which is number six. Mm-hmm. So, the tourney performance wasn't good, but if you look at the overall, non-conference schedule and what it says about teams. But one thing that the Big Ten was really good at this year was not having teams that are completely terrible. So Washington and Cal in the Pac-12 are just awful. Iowa State, Kansas State, and TCU in the Big 12 are just awful. So one reason that the Big Ten ranks so highly is because they only had really one team, Nebraska, that was that bad.
And they were just as good as Notre Dame, Nebraska was. They weren't even that bad.
Right. So that doesn't really help you in the tournament, right? Not having a TCU in your conference does make your conference schedule tougher, but the teams that make the tournament are all, the good teams. So that doesn't necessarily get reflected.
I mean, to me, the games were just odd. I mean, the Ohio State game, they were awful. I mean, they're 4 of 18 from 3. I mean, and they can't miss a three against us, even when they're checked. They're 4 of 18 and unchecked threes. They're 9 of 18 from the free throw line, and they're missing one on ones. You know, all of a sudden, Dwayne Washington decides he's Pete Maravich and is going to do nothing but play hero ball, not even pay any attention to the rest of his teammates.
That's kind of what he does.
Yeah, but this was even worse than ordinary. And they lose in overtime, but, you know, Oral Roberts does have two nice players. I mean, a guy named Abmas, who's a nice player, and they have Obinar.
Acemas.
It's Acemas, is how
it doesn't make any sense how it's pronounced, but
okay.
It took me a half to be like, is that really
a leading scorer, wasn't he?
Pardon me? Nation's leading scorer, and then they have Kevin O'Banner, who's got he's got Bobson Dugnut vibes, but like, so you've got those two guys who are just unconscious from three all year. Like, I didn't actually look up this matchup before the tournament, but if I had, I would have been like, upset alert.
Yeah.
I mean, so Purdue goes out as a four, and I think the question that I'm asking after this season is, how did Purdue perform so well to get that four seed?
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. That team being able to do what they did in the Big Ten is what's impressive to me. And they deserved a four, but yeah, this, them going out doesn't surprise me. Well, Iowa going out doesn't surprise me either because they don't play any defense.
Yeah, Iowa's not a surprise. But you know, Purdue was a surprise to me. But they I watched that Purdue game too that they lost. And I mean, I guess in the Big Ten was 6-3 in the first round with three overtime losses. So to some extent, you know, they might have been better. Maybe they would have had eight losses in the second round. I don't know. But but in that game, it was really, again, odd. I mean, Purdue is an inside team, and they shot 30 threes in that game. 30.
Well, and I mean, Trevion Williams is 7 of 15, right? So the thing about Trevion Williams is he's going to get the same quality of shot against anybody in the country.
Right.
So he doesn't get to the rim very much. He takes a lot of short hooks. He's very crafty. But, you know, he's like a 51% shooter from two, and it doesn't matter if he's playing a SWAC team or, you know, Michigan. Like, that's just what he's going to do. So, you know, they're very opponent invariant, and then they just can't shoot, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't talked about that all season. You know, Jaden Ivey is a talent, but he is the epitome of streaky.
Yeah.
Right. He is not a consistent jump shooter. They were maybe the most surprised by them watching the Ohio State Oral Roberts game. It just struck me as a team that it finally caught up to them not being able to close teams out. All of the, you look at the games down the stretch of the regular season that they lost. And then you get in the Big Ten tournament and they struggle to close out Purdue. They struggle to close out Michigan. Then they, you know, they can't close out Illinois. All of those close games, not being able to get stops late, I think the cumulative effect of all of that caught up to them in that game against Oral Roberts. With Illinois and Iowa, we just saw that they have two coaches that are extremely limited. Fran McCaffrey, till the end of time, will be the Fran McCaffrey that we just – this notion that suddenly – Iowa was going to be this. They're playing defense now. No, they ran into some teams that had some off games. You don't just suddenly figure.
I mean, there's a difference. Out. There's a difference between LSU, who doesn't play defense because they don't want to, and Iowa, who just does not have the capability. No one's going to teach Luka Garza how to be a good defender. No one's going to teach Jordan Bohannon how to be a good defender.
Yeah, you're right on, Seth. I mean, those guys just can't move their feet, and if you can't move your feet, you can't play defense, and so. You know, I don't know how much you lay that on McCaffrey.
It's been McCaffrey, period. It's not just this team and these guys. You know, at the end of the day, you got to look at what he is as a coach. Forever, he will be a first weekend coach at Iowa. He will not win a Big Ten championship. Will not make a deep run. And they seem to be okay with that, which is fine. Brad Underwood has not been to the second weekend of the tournament for a reason. We watched Porter Moser coach circles around that guy.
Stuffed him in a trash can.
It was unbelievable.
I missed that game. And can you guys talk about what went down?
Oh, my God.
All right. It's what Michigan should have done against them.
They put Krutwig at the elbow,
And okay. Kofi would not come out and check him, and they just ran dribble handoffs off that all day. And because those dribble handoffs were coming at the elbow,
yeah,
they were able to get downhill. They shot over 50% from two against Kofi Coburn. You know, Krutwig was 9-18. And then on the defensive end, they just blitzed every Dosunmu screen. So he finishes with 9 points and 6 turnovers.
And then what we've been talking about. Kofi Coburn, they were run 2-3 guys at him. And
he can't pass.
Yeah, and he can't pass. He made a couple passes in this game, which was surprising, but not as surprising. They said, look, if let's say he gets through all of this action, all of this, you know, these bodies coming at him, foul him so he can't get a send him to the free throw line. Surprisingly, the guy hit free throws or the game would have been been embarrassing if Kofi Coburn doesn't hit his free throws. You know, that it made it, you know, not totally a curb stomping that he was able to do that. But it was a coaching clinic that Porter Moser put on in that game. And you saw the extreme limitations of Brad Underwood on vivid display, in my opinion, in that kind.
Yeah, I mean, blitzing Dosunmu seems like a really good plan because he cannot go left. He has no ability at all to use his left hand. And so that doesn't surprise me. And I was interested when I saw the box score that he only scored 9 points, that something like that must have happened. Porter Moser maybe is a really good coach. Is that what you guys seem to think coming off of this, or is
he's
it just
got a much better case? He's got a much better case for a Big Ten job than he did 2 years ago.
Dude, he's right? Going to go back to the Final Four.
Maybe I
think back in the Final Four.
Baylor is kind of intimidating, but we'll see. But you know, yeah,
Baylor's coming on the other side.
Yeah,
Underwood just got stuffed in a trash can.
Yeah, he just has to get through. I think Syracuse will be the team that they meet. You got Krutwig in the middle of that matchup zone.
The Buddy Boeheim show. I can't. I mean, that just feels gross.
Yeah,
I because they'll beat Oregon State and Houston. I think is fool's gold.
Oh, that's right. Steve. I got the.
Yeah,
we'll see. So I think it's the Loyola Syracuse matchup, and I like give me Cam Krutwig in the middle of that. He's Mitch McGarry in the middle of that zone with how he's going to dissect it. In my opinion,
you know what I want to say about Krutwig is I remember him when we went against him. I remember him at the end of that game, and that the Wagner turnaround jump three that saved our bacon in that one. Krutwig just kind of looked at it like, no way am I going out there. I've just been running around this whole game, and he was worn out. Krutwig wore out Kofi in that game. And like, you could see him still running while Kofi was just, like, on dead legs. And I thought that was pretty impressive to get, you know, Sergeant Farva into, to be able to make it through that whole game.
Well, they couldn't play Georgie, right? Like, so Coburn had 32 minutes in this game, and I think Georgie's minutes almost all came in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't put their backup center against Krutwig in this game, despite the fact that like the actual center wasn't doing a great job. So
right. I want to cut Kofi some slack, man. They ran a lot of people. It was the Michigan State approach, except they didn't do it with a bunch of freaking bigs. Right. They ran at him, and we're gonna hack you, and odds are you aren't gonna be able to make your free throws. He did, which is like, where is this coming from? Lucky for Illinois, or this would have been totally more embarrassing than the outcome wound up eventually being. So Brad Underwood he's a better coach. He's a better coach than Will Wade, but not by a huge margin, in my opinion. I mean, to have that team and to not, he couldn't even make the adjustment at halftime. I mean, I'll give you, it's happening to you. You can't make it in game. Halftime, you can't come up with something that can slow him down. You can't come up with an answer at some point. I mean, give me a break, dude. So, no, not a good coach, in my opinion.
You remember that game when he was coaching Oklahoma State where, like, you know, Michigan and Oklahoma State just lit the nets on fire. And, like, I'm so surprised he has not been able to, like, do that at Illinois. Because Illinois, you're going to get you're going to get more backing than you do at Oklahoma State.
I mean, they did have a one seed this year. Let's not overstate the case too much.
Sure.
Yeah, they had a one seed, and they had a really
talented
team.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's the thing about Illinois is if you look at their incoming recruiting class, they don't have a guy to step up and replace Io or Kofi, assuming that Kofi goes. Please go. Well, they're going to lose Trent Frazier too. So their team next year is Curbelo, who I do think could blow up and just be awesome. He cuts down on the turnovers. And then Adam Miller, who really was just a shooter this year. And then it's like transfers, I guess. Georgie and Jacob Grandison, mate. I don't know. So like they could have a pretty big drop off. And then that would put some heat under Underwood, because this season where they were supposed to be king of everything, they go out in the second round.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of transfers, is Marcus Carr transferring? Is that right?
That's correct.
I think he's probably going to be in the – I think he's probably going to go the NBA route. Okay. But if he chooses to go to college, I think you got to kick the tires there just to see. I don't know. You hear things about what kind of guy he is, that, he might not conform. I would bet on Juwan's culture, being a great influencer. Maybe there's some question if you don't have any of the veterans returning as to whether or not you could corral any sort of ball dominance or, effort that he might have to really showcase himself. But I would kick the tires. I'd absolutely kick the tires there. I have zero doubt that Michigan is going to be looking for guard help in the portal. Zero. They absolutely will be.
Okay. Well,
if that's the case, then I think they should be kicking the tires on Myron Jones too. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a guy who big usage, shot 40% from three last year, really low turnover rate. Hadn't shot it very well from inside too, but I think you would see that pick up a lot when he doesn't have to be a 28% usage guy on a bad team.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like the potential for Myron Jones on Michigan. Now, I don't know if Mike Smith or Eli are coming back. Do you have an instinct on that at all?
So I think it's still an open question. It's not something that they're really
thinking about
talking about right now, which you understand, right? But
sure.
Talking to the impression I get is that the feeling amongst people in the program is they're probably all out. They're probably all leaving.
I assume Isaiah and Franz is going to be
of the seniors. I'm talking about Eli. I'm talking about Mike Smith. Yeah. Talking about Shawnee. I'm talking about those guys that they're probably all going to go. That is not definite. Again, this is not a conversation that's going on, but just talking to people. The feeling that they have is that it's more likely. That's the way to put it. It's more likely that they all go than it is. One of them returns.
If that's the case, then they've got to be in the transfer portal for one experienced guard, it seems to me, at least. What about the guy?
Unless both Mike and Eli came back.
Well, that's different.
I think that they would still be. Let's say you got one of those guys back. Mm-hmm. I think they still would be in the portal looking for a guard.
Have you seen the guy? Is he from Rhode Island?
Fats Russell. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched him once and I think he's a pretty nice player. I mean, I don't know.
And he might actually take a bench role too. One of my advertising connects is like the only Rhode Island fan. And half our conversations are about Rhodey and like he's taken so many injuries that like his stats don't really match what he is anymore. But he's a guy who could be kind of a Rockman kind of off the bench and certainly can get to the basket against good teams, and not a very big guy, but he's a spark plug. If you need guard help, and Michigan could have used another guard to be able to rotate in here, I would definitely look at that one.
Yeah, the other guy, go ahead.
The other guy who's in the portal who's interesting to me is Al Durham from Indiana.
Yeah.
So that's a guy who, isn't going to be a huge usage guy, but has been fairly efficient for them in a bad situation. And then also Armand Franklin also went in the portal. So either those guys might be helpful.
Yeah. I mean, I would certainly look at those guys as possibilities. Isn't the entire Penn State team in the portal? Is that
more or less?
I mean, it looked to me like they had six guys who were in the portal. I mean, is that right? Or
well, three of those guys are seniors who are looking for another year. So I don't. It's probably not quite as bad as that looks.
Okay, it's not a great look when your whole team says, "Nah, we're leaving."
Well, they had an interim coach the whole year, so
and they don't like the AD. It's very clear. They were talking, I know our guy, what is it, Fight on State, Mark Brennan, they profiled. There was one game celebration. They came back and won a game, and they were all celebrating. And Sandy Barber came over to try to participate in the celebration. They all ignored her. Like, they just felt like she was not transparent in her thinking about whether it was Chambers, who, you know, I kind of understand the decision there, but what the thought process was in letting him go, or even with the interim guy and the decision there, they just felt like they were totally in the dark. And it seemed like it was inevitable that there was going to be a mass exodus at the end of the season. So, but I'm, you know, a guy that's intriguing to me is who's the guy that Michigan State is one of the finalists for, Tyson Walker. You guys watched him at all from Northeastern?
I have not. Nope. The Colonial is a league that's kind of so far down the pecking order that you might get a guy who can really play, but you might get a guy who's just overwhelmed by the athleticism. And I think those guys are always a gamble. Like, you get it up to like the Ivy League kind of level, and that's like, all right, this is a guy who can probably play. But
I was kind of hoping to see Michigan's name emerge, but he has. I mean, Texas, Michigan State, Kansas, Maryland, Vanderbilt, and Miami are his finalists. So,
you know what? I take that back. Mm-hmm. I was confusing the Colonial with the Northeast Conference. The Colonial is actually about on par with Ivy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know much about him. I've played a lot of games on the Northeastern court.
Man, why would you?
But that's all I know. So I just don't know about him or what the deal is.
I mean, there's going to be so many more names that are hitting the portal.
You're right.
More names. I mean, everybody can transfer and everyone can play right away. Like, you know, you might get Max Akmus. I still don't know how to pronounce it right.
Acemus.
I mean, a guy like that could still, jump in the portal because now he's been on the stage. And
If Michigan, I mean, I'm not saying he's in the portal or what his deal is, but if Michigan could end up with that guy's incredible.
It'd be a great troll on Ohio State, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that guy's an incredible basketball player.
Do you want Oral Roberts on your resume? Do you want that to, like, you know, be graduated from? Like, that's probably worse than not having gone to college.
The thing about Acemus is he's just a sophomore, so like he might have even a little bit more upside left. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if that guy's in the portal, I think there's going to be a lot of calls.
Yeah, is O'Banner? Is he a senior?
O'Banner is a junior.
He's a junior. So I wonder if if O'Banner comes back, I wonder if just the whole band will stay together.
Maybe.
Yeah. Got to get some hockey in before we get out of here. So what do you think of their draw, Brian?
Oh, it's the worst draw they could have gotten. They have the two-time defending national champions, and then they have North Dakota next in North Dakota. Well, South Dakota. Where's Farcare?
North Dakota.
It's in Dakota.
Haven't you watched that movie like a gazillion times? The Coen Brothers movie. I figured you watched it as much as I have.
All right, North Dakota. So we can't have regionals at Yost anymore. We can't have regionals within 1,000 miles of the University of Michigan, but we can play in North Dakota. Okay. I mean, if you look at their season, you know, it looks like they got the 8 seed. And you can't really complain, but it is just kind of amazing how, like, whatever the worst possible draw is, Michigan will get it. And they have the talent to play with these teams. There's no question about that. But these teams are older. We've had some issues with losing a lot of puck battles in the corners, and I think that might, you know, tilt the scales against Michigan a little bit. But, you know, if Kent Johnson is loose on the ice, anything can happen.
Yeah, I mean, as stupid as the NCAA is in most everything, they're the stupidest in hockey. And, I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, getting to the substance of this game, I mean, Duluth is, 8-0, I think, in their last eight first rounds of NCAA hockey play. I think they're 8-1 in the NCAAs in one-goal games. Their history of winning in the NCAA tournament is profound. So it's not a great draw. And then, as you say, you get North Dakota at some place in that area in the second round. I mean, personally, these games tend to be sort of tepid. All these sort of so-called neutralized games in hockey. And why not have why not seed teams so they can play at home? You know, and what, at least until the Final Four. I don't see any reason why, if North Dakota has had a great year and they look like the best, one of the best four teams, why they just shouldn't get a home. And,
yeah, it would be a lot more palatable if we were just playing at the Ralph because North Dakota earned it.
Yeah. And those games in Ann Arbor, when Michigan was clearly, one of the best or one of the best two or three teams in the country, those regionals were phenomenal. But the NCAA went crazy over the Molly game. Mm-hmm. And they went crazy when the Michigan team tore the guy's mascot's head off or whatever, and the home games. But those games were great. In fact,
that was the Big Ten Humanitarian of the Year who did that, by the way.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the games at Yost in the regional and the doubleheader the one night, the Ohio State, Michigan State, I think, game followed by Michigan, North Dakota was the best sporting event I was ever at in my life. And it went till, I don't know, whatever it was, 3 a.m. And it was just like nothing I've ever been at. And for the NCAA to take those away, and I'm with you, Brian, let's play at North Dakota. North Dakota's the number one seed. They're one of the best four teams. Great. Let's play out there in that environment. And it makes no sense to play in, you know, Fargo or Fort Wayne or Cincinnati or wherever the hell they're putting these games. So it's really infuriating. It's the NCAA at its worst, and that's saying something.
I want to pick back up on something we talked about last week, and it sort of backs up a point Brian made, because when we talked to Spath, I think he said Michigan was 1-for-6 in 1-6 in one goal games. And I focused specifically on two of them. The most recent one that they lost to Minnesota after leading for two periods, and then they gave it up at the end, and then going back to Michigan State, and I asked Mel the same question that I posed to you guys, like, hey, you know, does that get in your head? Does it become a thing, or does it grizzle you? Does it harden you? And Mel, he made point, said, hey, remember that Michigan State game? He said it did jar us, but we won four games after we went on to win the next four. So he's like, hell, I hope and I expect that we will respond to this the same way. He said, now make no mistake, it hit us. Losing that Minnesota game, it did hit the team. And he said, it took us a minute to get over that. But if the past is an indicator, and he said, looking at practice here, the last few practices we have, I think the past will be an indicator. I really think that the guys are going to respond the right way. And I think it's something that hardens them heading into the tournament. So it really kind of backs up what you said last week, Brian, about you can't really read too much into, you shouldn't read too much into the one goal game record.
No, and Michigan has been up and down enough. Like, I think when they play Minnesota, it's clear that Minnesota is a better hockey team than them right now. So I don't think that they're the best team in the country. I do think that they're better than their record, and I expect them to give North Dakota a game should they get past Duluth in the first round.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, they can beat Duluth. They can beat North Dakota. I mean, it's hockey too. There's lots of randomness in hockey, in certainly in one game. And Michigan, I think, has more than a puncher's chance in either game if they win the first one. But that's about what you can say. So they've got a good chance.
I mean, who did Brian say was the MVP of the LSU game? Regression to the mean. What? Michigan's been unlucky in hockey. Well, you're entering the, you know, luck fest of the NCAA playoff. Anything can happen, right? And we're due. So maybe the puck's got to bounce our way now because it didn't bounce that way earlier.
All right, fellas, good job as always. And hopefully we're talking about a Final Four team.